You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Welcome to September. It feels like we've taken a terribly long time getting here. This month on my Patreon, you might want to check it out. I do have a special offer for those wanting to get an early paperback copy of The Frost Fair Affair in its entirety. I'm also dropping the ebook of this particular serial. Obviously, those of you who like to listen first may continue to do so. I hope you enjoy the ongoing story. But those of you who like to read as well, my Patreon subscribers are all receiving it this month, so they'll get it well ahead of the episodes. So if you become really desperately, desperately excited to read to the end, if I leave you any particularly troublesome cliffhangers, that is an option for my Patreon subscribers. And you can become a Patreon subscriber very easily indeed. Okay, enough of that. We are up to The Frost Fair Affair, Chapter 6, Opera Can't Fix Everything. "I have a solution to this entire mess," said Juno, as they made their way back across the river from the Parliament of Gentles. It was a sign of ridiculous privilege to be tired of sleigh rides, but Neem was sick and tired of this whole sorry winter. She did not think she could find a smile if one of the Frost Fair's legendary sword swallowers leapt before her and downed a dozen scimitars without blinking. "Go on," she said wearily, as Thomas tucked them in with furs and blankets. If a thaw was coming soon, there was no sign of it today. "What's your brilliant solution?" "The opera," said Juno, as if pulling a dove out of her bonnet. "No," said Neem, and hoped that would settle the matter. Juno was still wheedling when they returned home to Stormbolt. The gentlemen had arrived ahead of them, by portal, of course, and were playing billiards in their shirt sleeves when Juno and Neem invaded the cigar parlour. Neem's face was still stinging from the cold wind. She had torn the hem of her favourite winter dress when stepping out of the sleigh. It was quietly enraging to see how easily the men swooped about without having to worry about such things. To Hades with portals, she was campaigning for trousers next. Except, of course, her campaign for portals was already a miserable failure. Cousin Henry greeted his wife with a smacking kiss and a squeeze. Mr. Thornberry, knowing that their usual discretion could be dropped in the presence of friends, relaxed enough to kiss Neem's hand in greeting. "Tell Neem she's wrong," Juno barked. "I couldn't possibly," said Thornbury, with a secret smile. "It's so rarely the case." Well, if he was going to say sweet things like that, Neem could probably forgive him for the shirt sleeves. "Opera," said Juno. "I think when life is strange and complicated, the best thing to do is go out and have a good time. Hence, the opera." "That makes no sense to anyone that isn't you," Neem argued. "I can't fuss about opera glasses all afternoon. I want to check on whether the Fenchurches have reprinted my pamphlets." She gave Juno a very stern look, since apparently we have a meeting coming up soon. Juno was unabashed. "I have a wardrobe full of opera dresses you can borrow, and my maid is a genius with modiste charms to alter fittings and the like. Thomas can check on your pamphlets later, while we're at the theatre. You're right to stay on top of this. We must make sure no one swoops in to steal your work again, even if they did save you a lot of time by handing them out to society ladies." Neem sighed, perching on Henry's reading couch. She wasn't going to sprawl all over it as he did. "Do you really think I should keep bothering?" Thornbury brought her a cup of tea from the sideboard, where a teapot and light supper had been kept fresh with preservation charms, ready to be consumed at a moment's notice. "You're not losing confidence, are you?" Neem related the highlights of the conversations with Mrs. Savini and Mrs. Threnod. "It just all seems like such a mess," she finished. "Maybe I should keep my head down until this new scandal goes away. Not to mention the old one. Let the great discretion bring in respectable portal travel for married ladies, and hope that the rest will follow." "And you'd be fine with that," said Thornbury. "A small change when you could have been part of a mighty and glorious rebellion?" "Rebellions destroy lives," said Neem, leaning into his warmth. "I think everyone would be happier if I left it alone."
"I wouldn't,"
called Juno, from where she and her husband stood very close to each other against the billiards table, with very little billiards being played. She giggled a little as Henry did something with his hands out of sight. "Really, Neem, I'd make a splendid revolutionary."
"And become a social pariah."
It was all very well for Juno to be brave now in front of her husband, as if she'd not admitted to Neem earlier today how much it might cost her.
"Hardly that."
"There were no calls this morning, Juno. You don't want to get on the wrong side of society just so I can score a point or two for equality."
"Stuff and nonsense," said Juno cheerfully. "The best thing to do is go out in public with our head held high and show them all that their petty games can't affect us. I'm a duchess, and no one is taking that away from me."
Neem sighed again, more heavily than before.
"Hence the opera?"
"Hence," said Juno, disappearing back into her husband's arms,
"the opera."
"Fine," said Neem, with a weary resignation. "The opera it is." She was here to be Juno's friend above all things. If that meant the opera, then so be it. Apart from any other reason that Neem might have wished to cry off, the Pantheon Opera House was on the Isle of Court, which meant, once again, a sleigh ride across the ice. Neem was sure last time she spent any amount of time in town, there was not the same kind of willy-nilly flitting back and forth across the Scamander. There were bridges, of course, and ferries for those who had no access to curricles or cabriolets, but still, a trip across the river was a rare treat for those who had not negotiated themselves accommodation in court apartments or the palace itself. Did Juno resent that her husband's townhouse sat on this side of the river? Did she feel the need to make sure that society remembered she was a duchess now? The gentlemen were chivalrous enough to join them in the sleigh this time, wrapped in greatcoats and fur hats. Neem found this slightly mollifying, while still being the absolute least they could do. The Pantheon was very grand, with five tiers of galleries arching up into a peaked roof that looked like Mrs. Savini's bonnet. The fashion these days was for even the very grandest of patrons to occupy the pit, so as to be properly seen by everyone else from their progressively cheaper seats up into the heavens. Neem, with this in mind, had chosen one of Juno's less extravagantly daring gowns for the evening, and paired the green velvet with a lace fichu which may well have belonged to one of her great-grandmothers. Juno rolled her eyes at Neem's choice, complaining that she might at least wear the family pearls if she was going to dress like a maiden aunt. Cousin Henry, however, seemed to approve.
"Don't want you catching the muslin disease, eh, Neem?" he guffawed. "All those pretty young things wandering around risking colds and the winter lung to look dainty."
Marriage, Neem considered, had transformed Cousin Henry from a cheerful young buck in his late 20s to a middle-aged uncle out of a comic novel. Still, he was happier than she had seen him in years. Tonight's opera was a recent production by an up-and-coming composer
featuring the very popular castrato Hermes Fierro, a stage name if ever Neem had heard one, a handsome young man with a horde of devoted fans who printed entire publications of love letters to his boyish face and could often be spotted following him around in public groups and giggling behind their hands. It was the sort of thing that made Neem desperately glad that she did not have younger sisters. Her sense of personal embarrassment was challenged enough. Bad enough to overhear Lady Liesel and Juno making sly comments to each other about the tight fit of his trousers. The custom in the theatre was for a mixed group to sit male-female, where possible, like a dinner party. But that arrangement did not suit Juno at all. She preferred to be gossiping with her ladies. Every time there was an intermission, this particular opera had at least six, she was up and moving everyone around into a different configuration. Neem noticed that Henry and Thornbury ended up seated next to each other more often than not, falling into secret conversations together. Henry had brought a school chum of his, Figgy, to make up the numbers. Juno disapproved of any attempts to set Figgy and Liesel up together, which meant more often than not that Neem ended up wedged in next to that particular gentleman. Figgy's idea of intelligent conversation with ladies was pretty much limited to "Splendid night, what?" which at least did not require much in the way of a response. The music was pleasant enough. The opera house blazed in full lights throughout, old-fashioned candelabra, instead of charms, so Neem was able to read the libretto when she tired of gazing soulfully at the star of the show. Juno was correct that simply everyone was at the opera tonight. Neem spotted many people she knew, including the beautifully dressed Mr. and Mrs. Savini. By some accident, they were seated rather too close to the Count and Countess of Balmody, which caused quite a few uncomfortable looks back and forth. Mr. Thornbury, Neem noticed, paid particular attention to this part of the audience, even when the music was at its most dramatic. "Do you have a professional interest in this opera?" she teased him, when the next intermission switched them round again so they were sitting together. He gave her a guarded look. "What on earth do you mean by that?" Surprised at the intensity of his response, she sought to lighten the mood. What professional interest might a spellcracker have in a place like this? Operatic sabotage, of course. He relaxed, with a smile so warm that she felt the velvet of her gown heating up rather. Rival castrati setting traps for each other on stage, hexes in the costume box, wax dollies in the stage furnishings, she teased back, love charms in the curtain cords. Thornbury paid attention to her for the rest of the evening, which, on the whole, made the opera more enjoyable than Neem had expected. "Thomas, did you collect Miss Seaborn's parcel?" Juno asked as they poured out of the opera house many hours later. It had been snowing, with fresh coats of white layered on every street and rooftop. Thomas had a slight dusting of whiteness on his own heavy coat, from where he had been waiting for them to emerge. "I'm afraid not, Your Grace," said Thomas, as he handed them all into the sleigh and pulled out the blankets and furs. "The printer's tent was closed when I arrived." "Already?" said Juno, put out. "Goodness! Can they have run out of those little cards that were so popular?" "Surely the point of printing them on the ice is that they don't run out," said Henry. "I asked around a bit, and they were closed all day," volunteered Thomas. "I tried having a nose around inside, Your Grace, in case Miss Seaborn's papers were out where they could be seen, but a watchman came past, and I had to scarper right quick." "Good show," said Juno. "Mrs. Fenchurch got her value from that bribe, then." "I hope she's all right," Neem said worriedly, as the sleigh set off. Last time they spoke to Mrs. Fenchurch, she had sounded determined to spend every minute she could working the crowds at the fair. Juno snorted. "That depends, doesn't it? If her printing press was behind that royal hatchet job, she's done well to lie low." "You think the Fenchurches published that awful cartoon about the Queen?" Nim said in surprise. What else can Savini have been about?
Wait, said Thornbury abruptly. Did you say Savini commissioned that print?
We don't know that, Neame said quickly. It made a lot of sense, though. He did commission the Fenchurches for a satiric print, by a friend of his, he said, around the same time as my pamphlets.
I wouldn't be surprised if that wretched fellow took your pamphlets too, said Juno firmly. His wife ended up with a copy after all. I'm sure she could have lent him a maid to play that trick.
Thornbury exchanged a look with Henry that Neame did not understand, though she filed it away to think about later. What interest could the two of them possibly have in the parliamentarian's activities?
You know what? Henry said a moment later, as their sleigh reached the apartments where Lady Liesel was staying. Never mind this going home business. There could be a thaw any day now. Let's enjoy the frost fair while we can.
Oh, yes, said Liesel, clapping her hands. I want to buy souvenirs for my sisters. What's the point of being in town when something exciting happens, if not to lord it over all the relatives who are missing out on the fun?
Capital idea, said Thornbury.
And his hand, beneath layers of blanket, found Neame's and squeezed it gently.
I heard they brought in an elephant to walk upon the ice. Don't want to miss that.
I imagine the elephant would have preferred to stay home in the warm, said Neame tartly. But she allowed him to keep holding her hand.
Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.